Like a stone thrown into a pond, Pope Benedict's latest encyclical, Caritas in Veritate, made a big splash and waves when released, and the ripple effects from that are continuing to be felt across the wider international community. In the document, the Pope calls for a new world financial order guided by ethics, human dignity, and the search for the common good. He also outlines the goals and values needed for true human development. And in today's programme, I shall be following some of those ripples that are coming in the wake of the encyclical's publication, as people and thinkers around the world read it and give their feedback on this groundbreaking papal document. Kishore Jayabalin is the director of the Rome office of the Acton Institute, a think tank whose mission is to promote a free and virtuous society characterised by individual liberty and sustained by religious principles. My colleague Charles Collins asked Jayabalin for his impressions after reading Caritas in Veritate.
It's a very moral and theological perspective on the issue of international development, which is, of course, if you think about it, it's not surprising that the Pope would have something moral and theological to say on international development. But most international development experts might make a moral claim that there should be more money given to developing countries and such. But this is a much different type of appeal. It's that within the arena of international development, that moral and ethical concerns about the human person, the truth of the human person, come first, above any kind of schemes we might have from economic or political perspective, the truth about the human person. So having a charitable concern for somebody means not denying the truth, but in fact affirming the truth that the Catholic Church proposes, which is that all human beings are created in the image and likeness of God, and all of them have human dignity, regardless of their social or economic standing.
Now, the Holy Father mentions in his encyclical, a previous one by Paul VI, the Populorum Progressio. This is the latest in a series of the so-called social encyclicals. Can you tell us how this document has built on these earlier documents?
Well, social encyclicals tend to build on each other in the sense that modern Catholic social teaching starts in 1891 with Leo XIII, Rerum Novarum, who had to address the Marxist critique of the situation of the working classes in the Industrial Revolution. So almost every social encyclical has focused on the labor-capital relationship, it's often called, the situation of workers. I would say this encyclical goes much beyond the average social encyclical in that it talks about issues like the right to life, family, marriage, the demographic situation, and how those things affect our understanding of economics and of the working class. And in a way, the situation of the worker, while it's still very important from the perspective of this last encyclical, in a way, the concerns that Pope Benedict has shown show that it's not simply a matter of labor unions, even though that's mentioned in this encyclical as well. But the truth about the human person becomes the center of all our social concerns. And that's something the Holy See has often proposed in international arenas. But it's not something that's been front and center when people discuss Catholic social teaching, and it should be.
What do you mean exactly when you say the human person should be center? In a practical sense, what does that mean?
Well, in a practical sense, it means that any kind of development scheme shouldn't focus simply on structures, right? It should actually look at what are the aspirations of the average human person, let's say, in a society. So it can't ignore things like marriage and family and education. It can't ignore that the situation of people in developing countries is often one where they might have to move to a new country, so immigration becomes an issue. It means that it's not simply a matter of international institutions developing schemes, that it somehow has to allow people breathing space. Now, breathing space is a term that's used three times in the encyclical, but the breathing space aspect means developing a vibrant and diverse civil society, not allowing central planning to decide every single aspect of a person's life when they're living in a developing country, and also that donors themselves have a role to play in deciding how their money is spent. The Holy Father mentions that people should have an option in how their tax dollars are spent, for example. These are ways of putting the person, the individual person, at the center of the schemes rather than allowing a bureaucracy to take over the running of development from an international perspective.
This encyclical does come out in a very stark time in the world economy, both because of the recent crisis, the housing bubble bursting, the financial institutions collapsing. Can you tell us how much of this document is about here and now? How much of it addresses this crisis? And how much of it is aimed, in some way, would you say, at the world leaders in general?
I think the social encyclical Caritas in Veritate isn't aimed strictly at the financial crisis. There's not a whole lot about the roots of this particular financial crisis in the document. There's nothing about housing, for example, or nothing so much about lending or borrowing and how that leads to bubbles in a certain part of the economy. None of that is addressed in this encyclical. I would say it has a much longer term perspective that ethics and economics needs to be made integral. Integral is a word that's used often in this encyclical. Not to look at ethics and economics as separate aspects of international development, not to look at business ethics as a separate course rather than finance, let's say, in business schools, but to be able to integrate these, not only for political leaders either. And in a way, I think Pope Benedict is talking over the heads of political leaders.
Now, your institute deals with religion and liberty, looking often at economic systems and economics in general. One thing he talks about is that he points out the necessity of a system with three subjects: the market, the state, and civil society. Often when people hear the word market, they think of unbridled capitalism, the downtrodden masses. He's the second pope to bring this up, this idea of how the market is part of, is the necessary part. Can you tell us how these things relate, the market, the state, and civil society?
Sure. I mean, for a good part of 200 years, it was assumed that the market and capitalism are some things that just run wild, and the state and civil society need to control them. Now, that can be true if you have a market system where there's no real moral education of the actors in the market. If business people and consumers and producers aren't trained to have any kind of moral perspective or ethical basis for their actions, you could very, very easily have an untrammeled market which needs to be controlled more strictly than it would otherwise. Now, civil society and the state still have a role in market economies, but what the market economy actually is simply, it's not really a system in the sense that you're simply allowing people to make transactions, to come together and find out what the optimal buying and selling situation is among themselves based on their own needs. And in many ways, this fits together with the principle of subsidiarity, which allows individuals and families and local communities to make decisions that affect them. And they have the first and foremost responsibility to do so. Now, if for some reason they're unable to, or there's simply a larger problem that's involved, different levels of authority have the duty to assist those individuals and families and local communities. So at the same time, where the markets is a necessary aspect of a thriving society, it's not sufficient. And I think the Pope's great service in this encyclical is to provide us with a moral and ethical framework to determine what are the new structures within civil society, if it's given the breathing space and the freedom to do so. What kind of new structures can we develop that go beyond the profit motive? Now, of course, the profit motive is an important part and it's a necessary aspect of the market economy, but it's not everything. And I think that's one aspect that the Pope wants us to take into further consideration.
Another thing that the Pope touches on is the need for more development aid. He encourages developed nations to allocate larger portions of their GDP for development aid. Some people would say this has been tried, that, you know, more money down a bottomless hole. Others say that, no, the real reason is there hasn't been enough money given to help undeveloped countries develop. How important is it that the money be increased, and how important is it that the money be used efficiently?
Well, the call for increased international development aid, or ODA, overall development assistance, as it's often called in the lingo that governments and international institutions use, was a call that was made in Parlamento Progressivo more than 40 years ago. And if you look at the record of the last 40 years, it's not very impressive. Not only has there been a lot of money spent, but it's often been used for purposes other than it was intended to. It often, money from government to government often ends up in the hands of corrupt leaders who will then ship it off to foreign bank accounts or use it for things that do not affect the integral human development of the people of their countries. So in many ways, Pope Benedict is saying, well, there should be more of a commitment from developed nations, but he also says there should be checks against bureaucracies taking over. There should be checks against corruption, and there needs to be a way for the money to actually accomplish what it's meant to accomplish. And that's something that, if you look at the past 40 years, international trade tends to be a much more effective form of lifting people out of poverty. China and India suffice as two large recent examples. They've had plenty of international aid. They've received plenty of international aid over the last 40 years. But it wasn't until they liberalized their economies and allowed their people to use their talents to grow out of poverty and create wealth. And I mean, that's the important thing. The creation of wealth is how people get out of poverty, not simply a matter of transferring income from rich to poor countries.
How do you think this encyclical relates to the Pope's previous encyclicals?
Well, I would say the first two, Deus Caritas Est and Spes Salvi, were equally theological, and they didn't try to address as many social and economic concerns as an overtly social encyclical like Caritas in Veritate does. But at the same time, the Holy Father's expertise in theology is so evident when you recognize his language. In the first two encyclicals, he went well beyond the scope of a normal encyclical by referring to all kinds of non-Christian and authors who have critiqued Christianity. In this encyclical, he hasn't really looked at the problems. He hasn't been as critical in an intellectual sense. He hasn't looked at competing theories of development or anything. So, but in a way, I still think it fits because he is trying to bring the theological and moral element into the everyday thinking and lives of his flock primarily, but also to all people of goodwill, as he says. And it's not often when a pope decides to write about a social and economic issue at length like he has here. And this is a very long document. It demands a lot of attention, a lot of study, to determine what exactly the Pope is trying to get us to do. It's clear that he wants us to respect human dignity and to encourage solidarity among all the peoples of the world. But going from being neighbors to being brothers, as he puts it, requires a conversion of heart. And it's not something that I don't think he expects to happen overnight, and it's not something that reading an encyclical is going to get you to do, but it really requires you to approach every aspect of your life in a different way.
That was Kishore Jayabalin, director of the Rome office of the Acton Institute, talking to my colleague Charles Collins.